Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Scottish Football Covered. We've got another jam-packed episode for you all today. We're going to be talking about relegation dogfight, the last Old Firm derby of the season, and many other games to cover. Get in touch with us on Twitter at SFC Covered and join in on the conversation. I'm joined only by Robbie Caulfield. I say only, I mean brilliantly by Robbie Caulfield. Robbie, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yeah, it's nice to be back. I've had a couple of weekends of stag do's and title celebrations and whatnot, so it's nice to have a more chilled weekend to get back on the podcast.
Chilled week. It was quite the chilled week in Scottish football, but what I will say, there is one fixture that has never chilled out, and it's the first one we're going to discuss today. It's the Old Firm derby, or the Glasgow derby, depending on what side of the fence you sit on and whatever you want to call it. Rangers won, Celtic won the final derby of the season. Rangers denied three derby victories in a row for the first time in probably 15 years or something. Cyril Dessers and Adam Ida with a goal apiece, two strikers that come under a lot of criticism. Robbie, as far as Celtic and Rangers games go, this one quite forgetful, but it's going to have an impact on both sides going into next season. Rangers have proved for the third game in a row that they can match Celtic, arguably the fourth game in a row if you include the cup final as well. That went all the way to penalties. And then Celtic had a strong performance in the second half. So what sort of impact do you think it's going to have on Celtic, but Rangers as well, going into next season?
For Rangers, I think they can take some kind of hope into next season. You know, like you've just said, the fact that they've managed to disrupt the champions on multiple occasions this year does it bodes well, I think. But I think the main problem for Rangers this year, which they need to desperately sort out for next year if they want to compete again, is to stop giving away silly, dropping silly points here and there against teams that they should be beating. You know, that we've seen often, you look at the Europa League, for example, Rangers have, they have turned it on when they've needed to turn it on in big fixtures, but then they've dropped points against teams that they just should never be dropping points against. So I think that that's a big thing that they need to sort out this in the summer. Celtic, I don't think they've really got too much to worry about. I think, like you said, they play well in the second half. They've cruised to the title this year. They've looked way more dominant than Rangers have. And I think, you know, we've mentioned a few times in previous weeks that Celtic might have kind of taken their foot off the gas a little bit when they knew they didn't really need to win these games. But again, when push comes to shove, Celtic can win games just as much as Rangers can. So there's plenty to still be excited for next season for Celtic, I think.
Yeah, a lot of the conversation around this particular episode of the fixture, it came from stuff off the park. I suppose that's probably down to the deep meaning of the game. Obviously, it means everything to the fans, but in terms of the state of play, it meant virtually nothing. But yeah, so the headlines around this particular episode of the fixture were largely dominated by stuff from off the park. But before I get into the more negative ones, I'm going to talk about the Rangers dugout. Barry Ferguson still maintaining he's the man for the job next season. Robbie, it's seven games though so far at Ibrox for Barry Ferguson. Technically won none. He did have that penalties victory against Fenerbahce, but on the night they did lose 2-0. He's not the man to take Rangers forward, surely.
No, he's not. I think it was quite evident that he's not the man to take them forward. I think that was pretty evident within the first maybe 3 or 4 weeks. I think Rangers really need to look at getting in a proper experienced manager, because that's what they need, I think, at the moment. I think, you know, sometimes it can work making your interim manager your full-time manager, but, you know, a lot of the time it doesn't work. And I just think Rangers are in a position where they desperately need to be back at it next season to save that kind of humiliation of being really below par again. And I don't think that Barry Ferguson is the man to do that.
I think he had a job to do when he came in, and it was just to steady the ship. I don't think he's done that exactly, but what him arriving did, it just eliminated all the bad energy around the place under Philip Clement, because it was evident as well Philip Clement wasn't the man to take Rangers forward, but the longer he stays, the more toxic of a place Ibrox becomes, and if you bring in a new guy such as Barry Ferguson, it pauses that at least for a while, because nobody's really got, you're not going to give the interim guy all the criticism, which is largely a result of the performance of the previous permanent manager. However, if Barry Ferguson does get it on a permanent basis, he's not got much credit in the bank going into next season to help him survive, help him survive a early run of poor results. I know he was Rangers captain and all that, but his addition so far has not went well at all. Going away from Barry Ferguson, the Rangers dugout though, it's the headlines after the game. No one's really going to remember this game for a long time. What they might remember though is it's largely, I don't want to come and be too critical of the fans, but there was a glass bottle thrown at Sinisalo in the Celtic goal. It's not the first time this has happened at Ibrox, and there was a big display which was Graeme Souness pointing a gun towards the Celtic fans. Look, we wouldn't normally talk about this stuff on the podcast, but Robbie, look, it's causing, the Rangers boards came out and condemned it, and it's causing such a disconnect between the board and the fans when the fans keep doing stuff like this and the board have to come out and condemn it. With the incoming takeover, there can't be this disconnect. There has to be, everybody has to be singing from the same hymn sheet going forward, do they not?
Yeah, absolutely they do. I think partially that can also come from the manager. I think a big example, this isn't in Scottish football, looking towards maybe, for example, Liverpool, back when we were absolutely awful, there was a real kind of split and a kind of, a split between the fans and the board and the kind of the club as a whole there. And I think a manager like Jurgen Klopp came in and really kind of worked hard to move away from that. So I think that that can have a big part to play in it. Obviously, don't condone bottle throwing and all this kind of stuff. I think, it's a separate issue, but I think that kind of stuff does then, I think we spoke a couple of weeks ago about allowing, alcohol back in the stadiums and whatnot. And I think, just you select one or two idiots that go and do that really kind of have a damaging effect on that for the rest of the kind of footballing community. So it's disappointing to see, it definitely is. And hopefully it can kind of become more of a connected club again, I suppose.
Yeah, I just like to reiterate, this isn't me making a cheap shot at Rangers fans. I know this sort of behaviour has happened at Celtic Park in the past. It's happened at grounds across the country. It's just that, I think, and as you made the point, it's, we're a country that's striving to try to get that alcohol ban removed from football stadiums. Behaviour like this definitely isn't going to bring it back anytime soon. Back to the matter on the pitch, though. Look, we've mentioned Cyril Dessers is a, he takes it well as a guy that comes under a lot of criticism. Adam Ayder, it's another guy who's come under a lot of criticism this season with his £9 million price tag and a pretty woeful performance in the first half. Must have just checked his phone and looked at Twitter to give him all the impetus to score that goal in the second half. Probably the biggest talking point though on the pitch, Adam Ayder's chance at the end. It seemingly came out of nowhere. Before you know it, he's running from the halfway line, 1-1. William Kelly. Robbie asks if what he tried today was just to sort of drag it past the keeper and tapping it into the net. If he does that, it's one of the best goals he'd have scored this season, but when you look back, he's got to do probably anything but that. Do you think he should have took it himself or at least squared it for Johnny Kenny?
Given the form that he's been in this season, I think why not take it yourself, really? But it's one of them where you'd expect him to do so much better considering that form that he's been in this year. Like it seemed like such a such an odd decision to make, really. And I in such a kind of big game to do that, it didn't really kind of give shades of what Dyson-Mayed has been all about this year. So it was a bit of a confusing one for me. That being said, I still would have taken the chance myself.
No, I think yeah, the form he's in, he probably should have just hit it. I know I think he has had a problem with an injury this week, but that's no excuse to be honest. At the end of the day, I think even if he does square at Johnny Kenny's a Celtic hero in his relatively short career so far, a winner at Ibrox in the last minute. But the worst thing you can give Dyson-Mayed, that it's time to think about his decision. Usually, he's better when it's more on instinct, but. Look, we're probably going to close the book on this Rangers Celtic game. It's not a game that we're going to be talking about in years to come. It was not a classic that we're used to, but a more entertaining game to be found in the capital city of Scotland in Edinburgh. Hibs 3, Dundee 1. Martin Boyle opened the scoring, taking advantage of a defensive mistake before Kukureya, made it 2-0 within the first 15 minutes. Trifunovski got one back on the 50th minute before. Shut your ears, Robbie. Dwight Gayle sealed the victory in the 87th minute. Third place, seemingly out of reach for Dundee United. Would you agree after this result?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I think Hibs are a fantastic side, and Aberdeen are Aberdeen 3 points ahead? 3 points
Three
ahead,
points
yeah.
behind, oh, we're 3 points ahead of Dundee United, yeah.
Dundee have got a couple of tough fixtures coming, and Aberdeen have got to play against Dundee. I think they really, although they've maybe wobbled a little bit recently, Aberdeen, I think that's a game that they should be winning in the form that they've kind of come back into. So I think it probably is a little bit out of reach for Dundee, unfortunately. They've had a great season, they really have, and they should be aiming to be probably here or higher from now on, in the following years, but. Yeah, I think it would take a bit of a miracle, really, for Dundee to beat Aberdeen and Rangers, and manage to bring themselves into that kind of into those European positions.
I think it's just with the quality that, well, Hibs seemingly now they're six clear than they. It's definitely just out of Hibs and Aberdeen right now. I think it's probably going to be Hibs that finish third, just with the. I think the fixture list is a bit more kind to them as well compared to Aberdeen and Dundee United going to the last three games. Robbie, I'm just going to ask you because obviously you grew up a Liverpool fan. I know you've got family links to Hibs, I believe, but. What is your opinion on the split? Somebody's came out of this podcast. I don't know what your knowledge was of Scottish football really before it. Do you think the split is it a thing of beauty, or do you think it needs work done?
I like it. I actually do like it because I think that in a league that doesn't have as many teams, it means that everyone has something to play for all the way through the season. Obviously, St Mirren now probably are one of the only exceptions there. Maybe you could say Hearts and Motherwell in the bottom half as well. But even, just before that split, it makes it very, very, very competitive and very entertaining. You looked at there was three or four teams there. There was Hearts, there was Motherwell, there was it Killy, and then someone else was all, at St Mirren were all fighting to get into that top half of the table. So I find it as different as it is to anything I've ever kind of experienced in English football. I think it's a very good system of keeping the league entertaining.
No, I absolutely agree. I know obviously nothing's perfect, but it's like that going at that match day 33 gets marked in the calendar because so this season more so than a lot of others, just all that can happen, all there is to play for, and I think as well we're going to get into the bottom half of the table later on in the episode, but all those games because of how tight it is down there, they just mean a lot more now just because. Not only your winning benefits you, it harms other teams around you as well, which that seems a bit ruthless, but then it's just what football is at that end of the table. Back to the matter at hand with the United game, a really slack defensive performance from them, I would say. Like the first goal, Declan Gallagher should do better, albeit it's not entirely his fault. It's just tried to clear the ball. He's just not been fully aware. But that's 8 goals they've conceded in the last 2 games. Obviously 5 to Celtic, 3 to Burnley. Before this, they hadn't conceded in 3 games in a row. So, Robbie, I'm asking you all the difficult questions, but seemingly, what has just went wrong the last couple of games against these two top six sides?
Well, I think first of all, it's not easy to play against Celtic, to be honest with you, especially while Celtic was that the game that won Celtic the league?
Yeah, Celtic were. Yeah, Celtic
So,
just had to avoid defeat to win
it's
the
a
league.
game that they were bang up for. But then it means that when you do come on the end of a 5-0 thumping, we both play football. We've both probably been in that situation in amateur football, and it's not nice.
Speak for
It's
yourself.
not nice at all. I maybe have been there a few too many times, but it's one of them where at any level of football, it's going to have a mental kind of, it's going to have a mental effect on the side. I do think it is, and I think. To come after a 5-0 loss at home to Celtic, to then have to travel to Easter Road to one of the most informed, if not the most informed team in the league, who've been, blowing teams away. I don't think it's necessarily a slight on Dundee's mentality or anything like that. I just think it was one of them where they were probably their heads were a little bit down, and Hibs kind of capitalized on that, I suppose.
I think it's a good point you make about mentality, because I was intrigued to see how Hibs' mentality was going to be acid last week. Was this going to be the almost the beginning of the end of the good times for them after they suffered defeat last week? But they bounced back. It was a dominant performance, especially in that first half. They were absolutely on the fire, and then to lose that goal at the start of the second half and still have the courage to play the same way, and then also find what ultimately was the winner from your favourite player, Dwight Gayle, towards the end. David Gray was nominated for Manager of the Season. We're going to get into that near the end of the episode, but it has been a tremendous comeback, and Hibs are very vindicated in their decision to stick by him. Going into next season, Robbie, do you expect much of the same? I'm talking about Hibs here, because I think Dundee United, they could be at either end of the table when they surprise me. But Hibs, they might face a bit of a turnover in players. So are you expecting them to be up there challenging for third, maybe even second, depending on how things improve at Rangers?
Yeah, I do. I really do. I think Hibs, yeah, they might have a bit of a turnover in players, but if they do, I'd trust that they can actually bring some decent talent in. And I think a lot of the time as well with Hibs this year, especially since they kind of hit that good run of form, it wasn't necessarily, obviously the players have a massive part to play, but I think it was a lot to do with the system that they started playing and the way that they started playing. I think Hibs have massively improved since they started really pressing teams high. We've seen that multiple times. We saw that against Dundee today. Saw it against St Johnstone when they played against them. We saw it against Celtic. We've seen it against Rangers. They attack teams high up the pitch, and especially when they're playing those teams like St Johnstone and the teams lower down in the league. A lot of the times, it forces mistakes out of the other teams. I really do like the way that they've been playing, and I think David Gray has kind of hit the kind of jackpot, I suppose, in the way that his team is now set up. So I would expect Rangers, not Rangers, I would expect Hibs to make a few smart signings in the summer, potentially a new goalkeeper, and yeah, continue to push, because there's no reason why they shouldn't. They've shown now over a prolonged period of time that as a team they are more than capable of winning that amount of games.
No, absolutely. They've probably been my biggest surprise of the season. I know there's been a lot of surprises. We've not been short of them, but considering where they were at the start of the season, and even I wasn't really particularly inspired by the appointment of David Gray. I think they had a I can't remember they had a defeat in the Betfred Cup, the League Cup group stage It was to a lower league opposition. It was a shocking defeat. I can't remember who to. That's basically your pre-season. And then just that terrible run. They were bottom of the league with only like 4 points. And even David Gray, I had never been that impressed when he was interim manager. I think he was interim manager two or three times before he got it permanently. It was surprising. It did look a bit cheap, maybe, but look, it's definitely worked out. And it's really refreshing to see a manager get backed. It's just all depends on what players stay, because I know there's a lot of people out of contract, a lot of important players out of contract. So it's really important that they keep hold of their more important players and convince guys like Dwight Gayle to not retire. Or I think Martin Boyle, see, I don't know if he's thinking about retirement. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. We're gonna move on from Hibs. The final game of the top six that we're gonna cover, it comes from Paisley. St Mirren 1, Aberdeen 0. Mikel Mandron having and getting another goal. He's had a brilliant season. It was only goal of the game in the second half. I'm gonna stick to Mandron just now, Robbie. Obviously, he's born in France. He's played a lot of his career in England, but he's eligible to represent the Scottish national side due to his Scottish grandmother. Look, unless Kylian Mbappe gets a career-ending injury, I don't think he's going to be in the France squad either. And I don't think he's got much ambitions of an England call-up.
He's only one below him in the pecking order.
Exactly. He's been kept at the team by him. But would you take I don't even want to say a gamble, because I think he would be good. Obviously, I've been saying Simon Murray for a couple of weeks now. Look, with I think Steve Clarke's dabbled with George Hurst and Che Adams, other players from other nationalities. Do you think Mikel Mandron would be worth a call up going out here? Because the next two friendlies we've got to bear in mind is Iceland and Iceland, I want to say Liechtenstein. So it's two friendlies that are you friendlies are there to be experimented with. So would you take the risk on Mikel Mandron?
Yeah, I do, and I'm saying this in exactly the same tone as I said it with, like you said, Simon Murray a few weeks back. I think both of them probably should be given a chance to show what they can do. I said this last time that I know Steve Clarke obviously doesn't really like to tinker with his team too much, but I think one of Scotland's main problems is up front. I don't think Che Adams is quite good enough. Or maybe I'm not necessarily doubting his quality, but I just think he's not scoring enough goals, and maybe he needs a bit of that competition in there of players who are hungry to go and play for Scotland's international side, who maybe haven't done that before. To kind of, it's the same with any side. It's the same with club and country. You need competition for places, otherwise players can get too complacent about the fact that they will always be picked. So yeah, I see absolutely no reason why not, and I'm a big advocate for giving players call-ups and seeing what they can do, because otherwise things can get stagnant.
No, I absolutely agree. I think you do need that freshness for and that as just the word you said, competition. Definitely need that and your national side. And I'm a big fan of seeing players from your domestic league. I know obviously Mandron's French by birth and played a lot of his career in England, coming through the ranks at Sunderland and other clubs down there. But it's the same with Lyndon Dykes. He was Australian born and really embraced the Scottish game when he moved over. So it. And Mandron's not going to be a long-term option up front. I think he's 30 years old. Simon Murray's 33. It's two guys who, in the short term, could do a brilliant job for Scotland. But I think that's it. This is probably a matter I go on about it every week. I think it's probably a matter that we should keep on hold until the squad for the friendlies is due to be released, which won't be till probably about the same time as the Scottish Cup final. We're going to move on to the losers of this game, Aberdeen. It's a really Scottish thing to focus so much on their poor run rather than their amazing run at the start of the season. But overall, if they don't get third, how would you mark? Would the season be marked as a success? I know they've got the cup final to look forward to against Celtic. That would be a tremendous achievement if they can stop Celtic from winning the treble. But given the good run of form they were on, and at one point of the season there was about 30 points between them and Hibs. Would fourth be deemed? I don't, it would be deemed acceptable. Would it be met with disappointment, perhaps?
Look, obviously, after where they finished last year, finishing seventh, for Aberdeen to then finish in a European spot and get to the final at the start of the season, I think an Aberdeen fan probably would have bitten your arm off for that. And I do think that it is a success if you're comparing it to last season. But I think there will always be a little bit of disappointment and a little bit of something in the back of Aberdeen fans' minds that it probably could have been more. You know, the start to the season that they had was absolutely, you know, electric. I don't think they would have pushed Celtic all the way. I don't think that was ever going to happen. But to then go on like a 13, 14 game losing streak was just, it was unheard of, really. It was incomprehensible compared to how positive they'd been at the start of the season. So although fourth place, you know, it will be a successful season. If they do win the cup, then fantastic. I don't think they will, but fourth place in a cup final is a successful season. But like I say, I don't think they'll necessarily be over the moon when thinking where they maybe could have been at the end of the season.
Absolutely, it's a platform to build on. At least you've got a League Cup semi-final. That's when it all came crashing down a little bit for them. Fourth in the league when they were at one point last year, you were starting to debate within yourself, look, are they going to fall into that trap door, the relegation playoff? But I don't think it was ever a realistic end to their season last year. But look, you've got first season with a new manager. His signings have been relatively successful. Excuse me. I think they just need consistency going into next season, and once they figure that out, they could be, well, they probably will be further fourth for as long as Jimmy Tillin's there, if he can just get that consistency and get the right quality of player. But I'm going to move back on to St Mirren, because there isn't much to talk about Aberdeen surrounding this game. They didn't really have a shot on target. There was that goal that was given out. Was it correctly ruled out for handball? From, I forgot the guy's name, it was Kevin Nisbet handball, I forgot the guy who scored it. Gonna go back out to St Mirren, though. It's a big win, and I've mentioned, look, I think fifth in that final European spot, because the European spot's gonna go to the league, because Celtic and Aberdeen are in the final, the Scottish Cup. I just think that St Mirren have an outside chance, because they are capable of beating the teams in the top six. I think it's the teams in the bottom six that have they seem to struggle against, and we know how important their home form is. They're 5 points behind Dundee United currently in the league. There's three games to go, and both of them play each other next week. So, Robbie, it would be a lot to ask you, St Mirren, but is that final European spot a possibility? It is a possibility, at least, but is it a realistic one?
I don't think it is, unfortunately. St Mirren have to play Hibs and Celtic as well as Dundee United, whereas Dundee have Aberdeen and Rangers to play. And if you base that off, you know, Aberdeen and Rangers' form across the season compared to Hibs and Celtic's, I think you would probably rather be in Dundee's place. I think obviously it's a bit of a six-pointer next week when the two play against each other. But then, if even if St Mirren do make 3 points up on them, they then are relying on getting at least a win against one of Celtic and Hibs. I just can't see it happening, to be honest with you. They can maybe hope that there's some kind of celebration hangover from Celtic, and they play all of their kids to get them a medal or something like that. But apart from that, I really can't see it happening for St Mirren. It's undoubtedly been a fantastic season. There's nothing that you can take away from them from there. You know, finishing in the top six was a brilliant achievement. Will they finish in the European spots? For me, probably not.
No, it's going to be a big ask, and especially going away to Celtic in that last day of the season. The only thing, yeah, if they play a lot of their younger players, obviously they might have one eye in the cup final the week after. But flag day or trophy day for Celtic's just one of the days in the calendar. They always seem to just turn up and give their opponent a bit of a doing, to for lack of a better word. We're going to move on to the bottom half of the table now. This is probably where most of the excitement is going to come from as we go into the chequered flag part of the season. We're going to start up north in Dingwall. Ross County 1, Hearts 3. Irishman Ronan Hale gave the home side the lead early on before Hearts captain Lauren Shanklin scored a double. Really played like the Lauren Shanklin we've came to know. He was playing in that number 9 role rather than the number 10 that he was playing under Neil Critchley. Before Alan Forrest capped off the win with a winner late on. Robbie, it was a huge win for Hearts. They've just sacked Neil Critchley, as I just mentioned. The current favourites for the job right now, last I checked, I couldn't really find a betting site with the odds, but I just searched it on Google. Derek McInnes is favourite at evens. I know bookie, take a bookie's odds with a pinch of salt and please gamble responsibly, 18 plus, etc., etc. But it was Derek McInnes, obviously at command just now. John McGlynn, who's just got promoted with Falkirk into the Premiership, and then Robbie Neilson, who's going to be linked with a Hearts job for the tail end of time. Do you think they should go for either any of the three, or is there anyone else in the back of your mind that you think could do a job at Hearts? I said last week I think Barry Ferguson would actually thrive in that sort of environment, but he says it's Rangers or nothing for him. So is there anything in your mind that you think could do a job at Hearts?
Well, first of all, I was quite surprised by the Critchley decision, to be honest with you. I thought it was a bit of a. I know obviously Hearts have underperformed this season, but Critchley took them over while they were at the bottom of the table and managed to get them into some decent form. Did an okay job in January, and then they just wobbled just at the end to kind of fall into the bottom six. But I thought it was a very odd decision not to give him an entire kind of summer transfer window to try and really kind of strengthen that squad. But I digress. I think to be fair, I wouldn't mind seeing Derek McInnes at Hearts. I think he's done a very good job at Killy. I don't think necessarily I think he would probably be the best option there. When you think of kind of John McGlynn, he's done a brilliant job. They've obviously got back-to-back promotions, but does he have any experience in the Scottish Premiership? And is that a bit too much of a risk to take when you've got a club the size of Hearts who need to really do well next season? I think although Killy probably haven't done as well as they could have done this season, I think Derek McInnes has done a very good job there, and I think he probably could do a good job at Hearts as well. But yeah, for me, it just seemed like a bit of a odd decision to part ways with Critchley so soon, and I think it kind of does speak to a lot of what I think is probably wrong with the modern game and kind of manager turnover.
No, absolutely. I was surprised as well. I know a lot of Hearts fans were kind of screaming for him to leave, and probably I would trust their opinion over mine. But from the outside looking in, I was like, I think any manager should get at least three windows before you can properly judge them. But like, they probably weren't heading in the right direction under Neil Critchley ultimately. Excuse me. I think the decision from Liam Fox to play Lauren Shankland up front rather than in that 10 kind of solidifies that. Look, Lauren Shanklin was absolutely brilliant. And Hearts as a whole, as a squad as a whole, they looked fantastic. I know they scored three, it could have been a lot more. They were on top of it. Even I think the biggest thing for me was they went behind and still played so well. It really wasn't like the Hearts that we've kind of came used to in the last couple of month or two. Going on to who should replace him, I would put, if I was a Hearts fan, I'd probably want John McGlynn. You said it about his Premiership experience. I think, I don't know, even know if he lasted the season. He was Hearts manager before. I don't know if he lasted the whole season, but that was under that sort of Romanov era where it was not a safe. The job security of being a Hearts manager, you never really had any credit in the bank under him. He was a bit of a lunatic. I would probably go John McGlynn though, but I think he will have. I don't a bit of loyalty to Falkirk and after the back-to-back promotions. I think he'll want to see what he can do with them, and then if they don't survive, then maybe that's when he steps down, done all he can. A team that might not survive in the Premiership though this season is obviously the side we've mentioned there, Ross County. An absolute worry, this Robbie. Robbie at 6 defeats in a row, they're 6 points off the bottom. There's probably Probably too late in the season for them to be relegated. There's only 9 points to play, and there's 6 points in it. But they are travelling to St Johnstone next week. A win against a defeat to St Johnstone would obviously narrow that gap to 3 points. You've got two games to play. Nervousness creeps in, anxiety, and from the crowd looking in. I personally, I think they're going to survive 12, but I do think they'll finish 11th. We've talked about Falkirk. You've got other teams in the Championship who are so strong. Livingston, been in the Premiership for so long before they went down. Do you see Ross County surviving the playoffs? I know they had that great escape, if you can even call them that, in the playoffs against Partick Thistle when they were 20 minutes away from getting relegated and scored three goals very quickly to survive. But just given what we've seen the last couple of weeks, would you expect Ross County to, in a two-legged affair against any of those Championship teams, to stay up?
I think it's a difficult one, to be fair. I think judging on their kind of form recently, I would say maybe not potentially, especially because, as is the story of their whole season, they've struggled to score goals. I know obviously goals are important in all games in football, but when you're in a final, especially a playoff final, goals are absolute gold dust, I suppose. And for a team that's only scored 34 or 36 goals across 35 games, it's not a good look. I would say their saving grace could maybe be Ronan Hale. I mean, he scored 14 goals for a team that's only scored 34. But I think as well, a big miss, a big, I think a big, one of the big reasons that Ross County have started to kind of wobble and into this bad form is Noah Chilver's did his ACL, I think he did, or some kind of injury that's put him out for the rest of the season. And he was one of, if not their best player this year, in terms of picking the ball up in midfield and driving forwards. Because as a side, Ross County aren't probably the type of team that do that too much. So I think it's been a bit of a loss for them not having him in the side over the past month or so. So, when you've got a team in that kind of bad form with morale that low coming up against a side from the Championship that have been winning games and are in really good kind of spirits, I think the mental aspect can also play quite a big part in it. And I would be a little bit concerned for whether or not Ross County can stay in the league or not.
No, yeah, I agree with you in that point where you're saying you've got Ross County who are conceding goals every by the hour, and then the teams in the Championship are in such good form. The only thing I would say, I think we spoke about the split earlier and the flaws to that. There's a lot of flaws to the Premiership promotion playoff system, like the playoffs start on Tuesday, Partick Thistle versus Ayr, and then they play again, I think it was on Friday. You come through that. You've got another game the next Wednesday. It's just for the teams, especially in third and fourth, they're playing a lot of games. They'll be playing, would that be six games before they win promotion? So it's hard on those teams. I suppose you could say at the same time, Ross County are still playing league football as well. So it goes both ways. But I do think there's got to be, I think, like league reconstruction has got to be looked at. We'll probably do an episode separate on that, but it's a bit of an unfair. Well, I was about to say it's a bit of an unfair advantage for the team in the Premiership, but then they've earned the right to be in the Premiership, so it's not about being fair or not. I would say Ross County are the only team though in that bottom half that would struggle. I think Dundee, we're going to get to them next, but they can play well when they need to. Kilmarnock are just about. I think they are safe. I think every team is officially safe. No, Motherwell are the only team who are officially safe. But the other teams, I think, can breathe a bit easier now, just given how little games there is to play. We're going to talk about that Dundee game, though, that I just alluded to there. Probably my game of the day. I was watching the highlights. It was one I thought was the most captivating. There's a lot of talk about, which we're going to get into. Juan Portales, the Mexican, gave the Dark Blues the advantage. It could have been two. We'll get into that. He almost scored basically a carbon copy of his first goal. One disallowed, Tom Sparrow equalised an hour in before a stoppage time winner from Tawanda Maswanisi. He won all the points for Motherwell with I think it was a header. It did not look like he was going to win the header at all, and rose like a salmon. I'm going to talk about the Juan Portales double though, Robbie, first. I think his first goal is amazing. I don't know if he's right or left footed, but he scores the first one, the right foot on the volley at the edge of the box, and then basically a mirrored version with his left foot. The left foot one though got chopped off for an offside in the build up. Tony Docherty made his feelings well clear after the game, how disgraced he felt about the decision. I hope you've had the chance to see it. Do you agree with Tony Docherty's feelings? Is he right to feel so angry? Me personally, I know why though, and it's clear to see who is in the offside position, but I don't think he makes any impact with the play. That the defender has to clear that ball anyway, and then it hits off a defender, an attacker, and then an onside position. So do you think Tony Docherty is vindicated to feel the way that he does?
Yeah, 100%. I would be absolutely fuming as well if I was him. You know, he said after the game that if they go into the half-time break at 2-0 up, it changes the dynamic of the game completely. And it was a completely legal goal. You know, you look at the defender, he's not looking behind him, he's looking at the ball in front of him. Sean Essie comes closing him down. All the defender is ever going to do there is try and clear it as fast as possible, which he did, and you know, made a dog's dinner out of it. So I just don't see where the interference in play comes from there, from the player who's offside, because unless he's kind of running down behind him, like screaming in his ear, which VAR can't tell that anyway. Like I really do not see where the interference comes there, and I think Tony Doherty has every reason to be completely incensed with that, because it's a completely legal goal that's been ruled out, and you know, it's ended up really hurting Dundee.
Exactly, at this stage of the season, it is bit of a sham, to be honest, to get a decision like that so wrong. Just even looking at it recently, there, nobody's even claiming for the offside. The defender, or well, not the attacker for Dundee, actually like, takes his leg out like to avoid interfering with play. So it is an absolute disgrace of a decision, and it's a shame because Tony Docherty's probably going to get some suspended sentence or some touchline ban or whatever for conveying his feelings, which I know it's all subjective, but ultimately they are true. They got it wrong. I would have liked to have just seen Kevin Clancy called over at the monitor. Like, I know offside when those ones where it's black and white, you're offside there or not, but I've seen it at Celtic Park before. I think we played Livingston. When it's like this, it's up to the I think it should be up to the referee to decide, look, did interfere with play. This isn't one of those ones where it's black and white. Is he offside or not? Yes, he's in an offside position, but does he do enough to interfere with the play? I think he should have went on with the on-field decision myself. For all the criticism I'm giving VAR, it did get one right though, and this is where it's like two sides of the one coin. VAR steps in to give Johnny Koutsoumbis, this game has absolutely gave me an absolute mouthful of pronunciations to get. Johnny Koutsoumbis, the Greek Motherwell player, he gets sent off about 10 minutes ago. This is when I'm disgraced for the referee, because I don't know how he doesn't call this. It's right in front of him. It's an absolute horrible tackle, and VAR correctly sends him over at the monitor. Look, it was a crazy tackle, wasn't it, Robbie? I don't think he's done it with ill intent, but it's bewildering how I think every week in this podcast we're always talking about how a referee's came to a decision, or in this case failed to come to a decision where it seems so obvious to us.
Yeah, it's a shocking decision. It's a shocking tackle. I think it's one of the worst tackles I've seen in a while. You know, you can see it from, like, even when you were watching it in live, you know, full speed, you could see the way that he kind of made that leg movement, that his foot and his leg was going to be extremely high into that tackle. And then he comes down on it as well, like stamps down on it. You can see, you don't need to slow that down to know that that's a horrible tackle. We've got to kind of give VAR credit where it's due, because Otherwise, that goes on as a yellow card and he stays on the pitch for that, which is, basically GBH at that point, isn't it? But it just seems like such an obvious decision to give. I don't know. I can't remember whether or not the referee went to look at the screen for the offside goal. Do you know whether that was a just it was just VAR that did it, or did he have to go to the screen to look at
No,
that?
that was just VAR who gave it, and that's what I was saying. I think they should have sent him over to make that decision if he was interfering.
Yeah. Oh well, that completely it does. I was going to make a point which would just not make any sense now, so I won't bother with that then.
But look, we're talking about that red card. If VAR wasn't in play, you and then Motherwell going to win the game, you'd be like, all the headlines after the game would be Motherwell should have got a red card and then they've went on to win the game. But honestly, that red card probably made Motherwell play even better. The red card's, I think it was 10 minutes to go. And then Motherwell just absolutely three, two or three chances they had before, ultimately before they scored at the very end. Like, done. This is. I don't think you can look at it any other way. Oh, first of all credit Motherwell is for. And if you go a man down and still manage to get the win, it's you should be credited for it. But it's a massive chance miss for Dundee, isn't it, Robbie? You're 1-1 with 10 minutes to go, a man advantage. You've only got one home game after this for the rest of the season. When we've spoken about how good Dundee's home form has been for them this campaign, so Dundee were going to be absolutely kicking themselves that they've not been able to find a winner on that. In that time, would have had a man advantage, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the only thing that I would probably say that is maybe a little bit of a saving grace for Dundee is that they've got Ross County and St Johnstone still to play. I think by the time they play St Johnstone on the last game of the season, they will definitely have been relegated. So it'll be a bit of a mundane kind of fixture for them, whereas Dundee will be still probably, if they don't get a result against County, will be, really up for making sure that there is no chance that they can finish in that 11th spot. But having said that, of course, it's a extremely disappointing result. I thought that they played well for a while. They went 1-0 up, but then it all just kind of the momentum just kind of shifted. And I think it kind of puts them in an unnecessarily dangerous position, having to play that game against Ross County. It's just, I suppose, it's just kind of another kind of indicator of how their season's been. They've not been consistent enough. I know, obviously, their home form has been a massive kind of booster for them, but you still have to play 18 games. 19 games away from home. So it shouldn't really be an excuse. I feel like obviously your home form's always going to be better. It's statistically proven that you're always going to play better at home, but I don't think that that should mean that you just have to just crumble every time you go and play away. I think Dundee are good enough to pick up points here and there. They're probably better than where they are right now. I'm not saying top six better, but I think they probably shouldn't be getting dragged into a relegation scrap. So I think a big reason for the fact that they've done so badly this year is because they haven't been able to pick points up away from home, and it's been a real kind of shocker for them.
It's a sharp contrast to last season. I know they probably shouldn't be competing for the top six, but they managed to sneak in there then at the end of last season. It just goes to show you keep Simon Murray quiet, then you've got a good chance of beating Dundee. I'm gonna go back to Motherwell though. Lenny Miller picked up another assist, and then on it was it yesterday or 2 days ago? It was yesterday. He was crowned the Scotland PFA Young Player of the Year. I feel as if on this podcast, I said that last week as well, made the point, I'm always like looking at players in their future and where they might end up. I think with we can quite safely say Lennon Miller's not going to be at Motherwell for the rest of his career. I think even Andy Hardy's teammates said there's an inevitability that he's going to move, and he's going to move on for big money, which is going to support Motherwell going forward. Robbie, I want to ask you, I think selfishly I like Celtic to sign him, but you'll have seen from a neutral perspective the damage going to Celtic can do and Rangers can do for a young Scottish player's career. I think the first one that comes to my mind is Scott Allen, just to name one, but there's countless others. Where would you think it would be best suited for Lennon Miller to play his football? If I'm being completely neutral and unbiased, I think it'd be better off going on to the continent, probably to Italy, but I was just interested in your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I think if he does go to Celtic or to Rangers, is he going to start? Probably not. Is he then going to probably not reach his potential or not develop as much as he should? I think that's probably what's going to happen. So if you're looking at it from a kind of purely Scottish national team perspective, Lennon Miller has got the potential to be right up there with, some of the best players that are playing for Scotland. And you have to nurture that correctly. I do think that Italy, we've mentioned Italy before, is a good league to go to. It's a physical league, it's a difficult league, and it's a fast-paced league. And you've seen Scots going. Scott McTominay, Billy Gilmore, Che Adams have all gone and done okay. So I just think it's one of those leagues where often young players will get a chance to develop as well. So he, in my opinion, I would say going on to the continent would be the best move for him, because I just couldn't see him, being any different to any of the other players that have been to Celtic or Rangers and just ended up getting kind of churned up into that machine and not really playing that many games.
No, I think you're right. I think ultimately, I think it would probably find game time at Celtic. Probably find more game time at Rangers. But it just goes to show you. Look at Luke McCowan. Like he was starting every week for Dundee. And to be fair, Luke McCowan would have known his role for signing for Celtic. They'd just be the squad player getting minutes from the bench. Lennon Miller's probably at a stage of his career where he can't afford to be that a bit part player. With the hope of becoming a first team player. I think even if you look at Tomoki Awata, he's probably at this stage in his career just as good as Lennon Miller. Lennon Miller will probably be a better player than Awata is currently. He couldn't get into the Celtic team and he's thriving at Birmingham. I know Birmingham League One's probably a lesser league than the Scottish Premiership, but it just go like, I think the point I'm trying to make is Lennon Miller at this stage of his career has to be at a team playing every week. If that's in Italy, if that's in Scotland, if that's in England, best luck to him because it's important that we have a Lennon Miller ready to play for Scotland every international break, and I think he's going to be a very important player for Scotland going forward. But moving on to our final game of the weekend, St Johnstone nil, Kilmarnock 2, big game, which was going to impact the last relegation spots. Last year's Young Player of the Year, talk about Lennon Miller. Last year's Young Player of the Year, David Watson, probably not as good a season as he did last year, but still contributing here, scoring the first goal before Danny Armstrong scored his second goal of the season from the penalty spot in the second half. This is the first win away for Kilmarnock since October. Robbie, it's this away form. We've spoken about the importance of home form a lot this podcast, but away form obviously is equally as important, and it's this away form that's let Derek McInnes' side down this season, hasn't it?
Absolutely, because I think probably out of those maybe bottom four teams, Killy should be doing way better than they are. They've got a good squad, they've got a lot of young players, a lot of promising players, and their away form has let them down so much this year. I think, like I've already said, I think Derek McInnes has done a very good job with Killy since they've come in, but they've really have needed to be much better at home, not at home, away from home, this season. I think It also kind of says plenty about how easy St Johnstone have been to beat this year when they've not won away since October, I think it was. And then they go and win 2-0, keep a clean sheet against St Johnstone. But yeah, it just shows just how important it is to be able to win, not just at home, but pick up points on the road as well, because otherwise you can very easily get dragged down into that second half of the table, and then maybe into that kind of potential relegation battle.
excuse me. That's a good point you make, regarding how easy it has been to play against St Johnstone. Especially, I think the other teams surrounding St Johnstone have a quite formidable grounds to visit. Rugby Park's got that synthetic surface. Tynecastle is Tynecastle. Dundee playing really well at home this season at points as well against Celtic and Rangers. I'm going to talk about the man in the Camogie dugout, though, Derek McInnes. We've touched on him and how he's linked with a Hearts job. I think he would do a brilliant job at Hearts, and I equally think he's done a brilliant job at Kilmarnock. But I did say earlier this season that I think when he got, excuse me, still got a bit of that cold for the weekend. I think he's hit a ceiling with Kilmarnock when he got him in the European spots. He got manager of the season last year. I don't think he's going to be able to surpass that achievement. Do you think it would be beneficial for both parties, Kilmarnock and Hearts, for Derek McInnes to leave at the end of the season, or is continuity really important for Kilmarnock going into next year?
Yeah, I would say continuity, to be fair. I think the last thing Killie need right now, after probably underachieving this season, is to then go and, part ways with their manager, who has done such a good job at getting them up that table. It would obviously be like I've already said, it would obviously be a brilliant, brilliant appointment for Hearts, but I think I couldn't see it being a very good one for Killie, to be fair. It feels like if that were to happen, there would be a little bit of a hangover period from that. I don't see really that many other managers that could come in and do that kind of a job. But like you say, I do think he maybe has hit a bit of a ceiling. I think he can obviously do better than he has this year, but with the strength of the other teams in the league now, you're looking at Hearts are probably going to be back up there next season. You're thinking Dundee United are going to be back up there next season. You've got Hibs, you've got Aberdeen, you've got St Mirren, who will want to keep pushing for top half finishes. Are Killie going to be given the chance to get up there? Hard to say, really. So yeah, I don't think that. I don't really think that Derek McInnes can do much more with them, but I think Killie would suffer quite heavily if they were to lose him.
Yeah, that's what you've got to think when you're wanting rid of a manager. You've got to think of who's going to replace him, who would come out of Kilmarnock and do a better job than Derek McInnes. Look, the truth is probably it's the lazy link again, but it could be like a guy like Neil Lennon. He gets linked to every top flight job, and I know he's currently at Dunfermline, but I think he's only contracted to the end of the season. He's probably the only person I could see realistic that it's a realistic alternative to come in and improve Kilmarnock. I'm more worried for the ban at artificial surfaces comes into play not at the beginning of this season, but the beginning of the next season. Rugby Park might just be that is what makes going to Rugby Park a lot more difficult, because you've got that added battle of playing on that. It's a terrible surface as far as after tough ones go. I don't even know how the Kilmarnock players can enjoy playing on that, but again, I'm digressing. We're going to go from the Kilmarnock dugout, the St Johnstone dugout. Seymour Valla Carrighty, I don't want to say split opinion. I think the overall opinion on him is that he's improved, but St Johnstone, but I don't think it would have been very hard to improve them from where they were under Craig Levein. And ultimately, he's not done enough, but it was always going to be a hard task considering where he took them. He's committed to his desire to see out his contract, even if St Johnstone do get relegated this season. These rubbish links, letting him back to his home country of Finland to manage Helsinki. Robbie, do you think that's in the best interest of St Johnstone? I've been quite impressed with the sort of philosophy that he's trying to implement, but he's going to be under pressure, though, to deliver next season. And do you think St Johnstone ultimately can bounce back up under Valachny's stewardship?
Well, it feels like what they've been doing this season is kind of preparing for life in the championship. I think, although I do like the kind of footballing philosophy that they play, I will always prefer attractive football to non-attractive football. I think, given the position that St Johnstone have been in for so much of this season, they probably should have been playing more unattractive football. I don't think they've got probably the quality of squad to have played attractive football in the Premiership. So it does seem like since he's come in, they've kind of almost, conceded the fact that they were probably going to get relegated and making sure that they're playing attractive football to go straight back up again. The pressure will obviously be on because if they start to drop points early on in the championship, then alarm bells are going to be ringing. And there's always kind of a worry of that, I suppose, especially when you've been losing so many games across the last season. But that being said, do they have the quality of player to, excuse me, do they have the quality of player to succeed in the championship? I think probably. And if they are playing that style of football with players that are good enough to play at a high level in the championship, then they should do much better than they've done this season.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely bang on. There've probably been times where they've needed to be a bit more pragmatic, and I think it's just a dying thing in football, the ability for the manager to go away from their principles and not really have a plan B. It's, you've seen it done in England. Russell Martin's probably the biggest example. He got Southampton up playing his style of football, but then he gets him relegated as well playing the same style. He's not had that ability to switch up his style. And I'm not going to blame Vallacry for St Johnstone's relegation, but there is times where he would have had a chance to win points if he played a bit different. It's just I don't know if the championship's such a hard league to predict. Going it for next year. Going to looking at it for next year, it's too hard to predict because the turnover in players for every team, some of the squads are going to look unrecognisable. But it's I'm not too confident their chances to bounce back up, especially, but which is strange considering how much they have prepared for this season, prepared for next season, this season at times. But another news that rounds up the Premiership action. Just quickly, other news flashpoints from this season. The PFA Player of the Year awards, well, yesterday, Player of the Year, could have been anyone else apart from Daisa Maeda. Young Player of the Year, Motherwell's Lennon Miller. Goal of the season, Ayredale for Hibs in the derby against Hearts. His goal ultimately proved to be the winner. And Manager of the Year was that man, John McGlynn, that we've spoken about. Robbie, just my final point. If that's back-to-back promotions for Falkirk under John McGlynn, they were in such a terrible, they were thinking they were like mid-table League One when he came in. It was a big risk for him. They're unrecognisable now compared to when he first came in to the way they're playing. They just played last week on Friday. How do you think they're going to be able to compete next season in the Premiership? Personally, I think I can see them surviving. I think they're going to keep a lot of their players. I think they'd be really important if they can encourage Scott Arfield to play just for another year. But going and looking at the next season, if they're able to keep Scott Arfield, if they're able to keep John McGlynn, would you agree that they'll be able to survive?
I would love to say so. I hope that they do because I think it's an incredible story whenever a team gets kind of double promotions. And I think Scott Arfield has been a massive, massive, reason as to why that they've gone up this year. He's a fantastic footballer, and it was almost as if it was like a level above. He was playing at a level of below what he probably should be. Because I would say that Scott Arfield is still good enough to probably be playing in the Scottish Premiership. So I would like to say that, yeah, of course they can. The only thing I would say is there are times when you've seen teams get very quick successive promotions, and maybe it's a little bit too quick. I think, for example, you look at Ipswich in the Premier League this year, they While they did actually look like probably the only team of the relegated side of the yeah of the relegated sides that looked like they could give teams a game, it wasn't quite good enough. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, especially with the way that finances work in football now and the way that you can't lose a certain amount of money, will the kind of investment be enough for them to stay in what is now quite a competitive Scottish Premiership? You know, there's a, like I've already said, there's a lot of teams in there now that will be looking next season to be pushing right up there. So, yeah, it'll be a difficult one for them, but I would like to see them stay up. I think it would be a bit of a one of those kind of wholesome fairy tale football stories, I suppose. So yeah, I would like to see them stay up.
Yeah, I think Scott Arfield's going to be pivotal in their survival bid. I said when they signed them in January, that effectively is what won them the championship. And then I think he scored a hat trick on his debut. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure he did against Partick Thistle. So if they keep him, then that does their chances all the good. But ultimately, that rounds us up for today's episode of Scottish Football Covered. I've been Mac, joined by the glamorous co-host, it is Robbie Caulfield. We'll be back with you next Monday at 4 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Don't forget, you can join in on the conversation on Twitter. Tweet us at SFC Covered and enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you for listening.